What's going on, everybody? It's another episode of Denmark and Marsh. I am Dylan Denmark. Graham Marsh will be beside me in a second. And we finally have a draft after all of the mocks and the speculation and where Jacksonville's going to go. Jacksonville finally decided in the first round to go with Brian Thomas Jr. and basically went with a lot of the LSU guys in the Florida State corner round three, as Graham, with a lot of bed hair, decides to pop in the program. Graham, what's up?
What's up? Yeah, a little heavy on the LSU for my taste. Three was aggressive. Two would have been fine. They can play. Yeah, but did you watch LSU's defense last year?
Oh, it was terrible.
Here's the thing, though.
With their, not saying for Brian Thomas. Brian Thomas is a little different. But for Mason Smith, what was it? He had six defensive line coaches over his three-year span. Like, he had a lot of defensive line coaches. For the people that don't understand, really, once you get into college and pro, you spend all your time as a player with your position coach.
Yeah.
So that's the main guy that is going to help you develop and get you from, because he was a five-star coming out and was expected to do great things, and he had a knee injury game one against FSU 2 years ago. From everything that I've read, he's very boom or bust.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you know, what is he going to be in Jacksonville? Who knows? But that's the one hard part about college is you don't know what you get because you can't judge everything from what you've seen in college. You know what I mean?
We should have seen this coming. Explosive, high upside guy.
Versatile.
Really good athlete. Versatile. And then suffered a big injury, so his production dipped. That has Trent Baalke draft pick written all over it.
Yes.
We should have known this in the early process, that our second round pick, we should be like, all right, we know what they're doing.
Yeah, so let's go back to the first round, Graham. They were at 17. They trade back to 23 with Minnesota. They got a lot of good value out of that pick. You get a fifth rounder from this year, and then you get two picks for next year. And the way the board fell, there was no defensive players taken in the top 14 picks. Our Byron Murphy was the first one at 15. And then there was no corners or receivers after the top three receivers until 22, whenever Quinyon Mitchell went. I would have liked to have seen them go Quinyon Mitchell was gone. Terrion Arnold. At 23, I'm fine with Brian Thomas. I was more anti-receiver just because there were so many receivers that were going to go in this draft. But I'm fine with Brian Thomas going around one.
So I initially, when we had this conversation last week, I agreed with you on that. And we did agree. But I'll tell you, man, look at the insane run on receivers late first round, early second. Dude, they wouldn't, even with as deep as this receiver class is, like, kind of that still, like, first tier, like, cream of the crop guys in this draft, those guys would have all been gone. It's not the first tier. The first tier is those top three, obviously, but you know what I mean. Like, the main guys that any receiver needy team said, we need one of these dudes, they would have all been gone by the time the Jags had their second pick. I honestly, looking back, I'm kind of glad they did take Brian Thomas Jr. because I thought they needed to come away with at least one of those receivers at the end of this draft. And, dude, I mean, Ricky Pearsall in the first round, Ladd McConkey right afterwards early in the second round, Keon Coleman was the 33rd pick, I believe, right? Yes. Yeah, Keon Coleman is the 33rd pick. A.D. Mitchell fell a little bit more than I expected him to, but he still went earlier before the Jaguars pick would have been. And all those main guys were gone. Xavier Leggett was gone. Like
A.D. Mitchell...
Yeah, who would they have picked at receiver?
They would have settled for Burton from Alabama.
Yeah, and that, like...
That's okay.
That's, like, in... By first tier, you know what I mean when I say that, right?
Like, those 10 receivers that went.
Yes.
That's the tier you're talking about.
Those guys that, when people were talking about the draft beforehand, they said, yeah, this is an insanely deep receiver draft. You have these top three, Harrison Jr., Neighbors and Adunze, those are the top three, no questions asked. They're the very, very top tier cream of the crop. But look at how deep this receiver class is. You got this guy and this guy and this guy. These were the names selected. Jermaine Burton was not on that list.
I will say, though, like, if you look at years past with receivers, it's everything is so hit or miss.
It is.
It is like you can look at fourth, fifth, or sixth rounders, and they're like, that guy, I have no idea who he is from 3 years ago. And you're like, oh, this guy's really good. So it's obviously not one size fits all, and it's always subjective. You just never know with receivers. And I saw, I don't know if you saw this list from Adam Schefter. There was, he came up with everybody that was selected in the first round. He broke it down by a position group, and it was based on their hit rate. Receivers were the most drafted, I think, out of anybody, out of any position. And receiver had the lowest hit rate. It was like 30-something percent. Might have been 27. But it was all based on, did that person get a second contract with that team he was drafted by? So obviously, Stephon Diggs isn't a part of that hit group because he got traded to Buffalo. Receiver was the lowest, but it's hard to change because it's hard to judge receiver based on from 2000 to 2012 because it was a different game back then. And now, you saw, I mean, the top 14 guys in this draft were all offense. You always hear the term, you know, defense wins championships and this, that, and the other. And that those days are long gone now.
Yeah,
it's all about the playmaker and how you can help your quarterback. And you saw that from virtually every team now.
What did surprise me a bit, though, is every team was so hell-bent on getting offensive guys and offensive weapons to. It did surprise me a little bit how long it took for the first corner to go off the board.
It did too, for me too.
Because you're right, receiver, having a great receiver is more important than it's ever been, even though I know the Chiefs just won it all with Rashee Rice as their best receiver, basically. But you had Mahomes, and that's not really the way I think other teams can. I don't think that's really a blueprint other teams can model because they don't have Patrick Mahomes. But you would think that if receiver stock is rising in modern era football, corner stock would rise as well, right?
Yes, because that's how to stop them.
Particularly big physical corners. Guys that can jam at the line. Guys that can really screw you up in your first 5 yards. And Quinyon Mitchell is definitely that guy. It was just, probably the biggest, outside of like some of the QB stuff and, you know, in like the Vikings standing pat and taking JJ at 11, outside of kind of that stuff, and obviously Michael Penning's getting picked, but I'm sure we'll talk about that. Like that stuff was the biggest surprises to me. Outside of that, Quinyon Mitchell falling the 22 was crazy.
Yeah, I wrote on the morning of the draft, and I wrote right before the draft, like as they were going, like pick by pick. I was writing notes. I said, draft starts at 13. I said, who gets tackles, corners, and D-line? I'll be shocked if Mitchell does not go before Jacksonville at 17. That was my thoughts from reading all the mocks that morning of. Because if you read the morning of, it was Dallas Turner was expected to go first. Then Byron Murphy was supposed to be the second defensive player taken off in the draft. And then there was a lot of A.D. Mitchell going to Indy in the first round. Tony Pauline and Matt Miller both had him going in the first round. And they both said, I don't agree with this, but we're getting so much intel that Indy loves this guy that they're going to take him. Now, they ended up taking him in the second round. Something that had to do with character issues and what's the Colts GM's name? Chris something.
Ballard.
Ballard. Yeah. I was about to say Ballard. I mean, that's not right. Chris Ballard went off about the character issues and said it's a joke, yada, yada, yada. So when you go from that intel, and then obviously, you know, it's so funny. You look at all these mocks, like all these mocks were like 90% wrong. But it's one of those things where you don't know how the board is going to fall. When you're in that moment, like I asked Dave Campo, like when you're in that moment, you're in the war room as he was for many years as a Dallas Cowboy coach, rather than being a DC or a head coach. I was like, Coach, how nervous is he? He goes, it's nervous. Like, and this is, you know, a pretty monotone dude that doesn't really, you know, get up or down about much. He's like, it's very nerve wracking when you're in that war room. But Brian Thomas is fine to me in the first round. The draft, you got all your needs. I mean, we all said, you know, your top four rounds, you're going to go receiver, in no order, receiver, corner, interior D-line, and some kind of offensive line. They did that. And Balke did what he did last year and pretty much won with a lot of big-name teams. Last year was Penn State, Auburn, Oklahoma in the first round. This year was LSU, FSU,
Missouri.
Yeah. It was all SEC, ACC for the most part.
Arkansas.
Kicker.
Shout out the kicker. Yeah. I don't know, man. Here's the one issue I had with the trade back. And the way they conducted the first round was masterful, because I believe them that Brian Thomas would have been their pick at 17. I believe that, because they didn't trade back very far, and they still picked Brian Thomas. So to do that, to still get who would have been your pick at 17 and accumulate picks, including a third and a fourth round next year, they fleeced the Vikings, in my opinion, if you're factoring in next year's stuff as well. Here's my problem, and they did this last year too. They traded back twice and took Anton last year. And what did we all think after that? We all thought, okay, they've accumulated a lot of kind of like back end of the draft stuff, like rounds 5 through 7 stuff. They're going to package some of that and move up and get another third rounder, fourth rounder, what have you. And they really didn't. They just drafted a bunch of bodies in the 6th and 7th round. Like, no disrespect, but like, is Eric Hallett making a big difference on this team?
So would you had gone up in the second round and gotten Kool-Aid? Because that was the main talk going into the second round. You got a couple of these picks for this year and next year, and Kool-Aid was the guy who was like, okay, corner's the need. Corner is Cooper DeJean goes. All right, then now Kool-Aid's available.
In my opinion, if you're not planning on doing something like that, what's the point of trading back? They're getting these extra picks for no reason. There's not no reason. I know next year it's going to be nice to have that third and fourth. I know, but like, I would have rather them use, because they got what, like a 7th or something of this year, and then
it was
like
a 5th this year, and I think a 3rd and 4th for next year. It might have been a 4th or 5th.
Why can't you use that 5th and maybe your 4th or something in next year's the 3rd that the Vikings gave you and trade back into the 2nd and get Kool-Aid or whatever? Like, I wanted to see them do something like that, and they didn't. In my opinion, like, trading back and accumulating the value is good, but it's a production versus results thing. Like, what's the
give and take? Like, you're going back, but you're not.
Or not production. Sorry, value versus, like, you've accumulated value. You won the value game. Great. But on Sunday, when ball is being played, how is that translating to good players for you? And typically, I know there's diamonds in the rough, but typically, accumulating a bunch of 6th and 7th round picks and just extra bodies for camp, that doesn't help me on Sundays, man. Like, I wish they would have been able to turn that into another blue chip player in the 2nd or 3rd round.
Agreed. In my opinion. So, as we wrap up,
last year was much worse.
Yeah, it was.
Last year's like, dude, what are you doing? What did they draft? Like 12 guys last year?
Let's wrap with this. So, since the day after the Tennessee game, from that day to now, one, is Jacksonville a better football team? Two, how's the offseason been? I think the offseason's been great. I want to say great. It's been pretty good considering all things.
Yes, the Jaguars are better. How's the offseason been?
Calvin Ridley goes, you get Gabe Davis. Yeah.
Can I
you
grade
get
it?
Eric Armstead. You can give it a grade. I'm not much of a grade guy. It was decent to me.
B plus.
I go in that range.
I thought the draft was a C plus, B minus. Something okay. Like that. I didn't love the two LSU D tackles, and that's like a huge part of this draft. So I'm a little bit down on the draft, to be honest. Mason Smith is hit or miss. You know, he might turn out to be great, and that'd be fine. But to get Mason Smith and then go get Jordan Jefferson 2 rounds later, it's like
that was a head scratch. I wasn't watching the draft at all Saturday, but when I saw it on my phone, I was like,
Can I get a guard at that point instead? Can I get something in the trenches on the O-line? Like, I wish I'd have gotten more O-line maybe there instead of D-line when they already took D-line. Or can I get an edge maybe? I didn't love another D-tackle at that point. At this point, unless Jordan Jefferson becomes a huge standout in camp, which could happen. But if he's if he plays like a fourth round pick typically plays, where is he going to get on the field, man?
I don't know.
Mason Smith, you assume, is going
to
start.
I mean, they're all going to be a part of a rotation. Now, how the rotation is going to be.
Right, but if you're like deep into that rotation, man, like how much are you really playing outside of... isn't Jordan Jefferson like huge? Isn't he like a huge run? Okay, so maybe like goal line and stuff he might play, but besides that, like... Okay, Eric Armstead and I assume Mason Smith are going to start, right?
Yes.
And... Devon Hamilton's still on the roster, so he's going to play a lot, right?
One would assume, yes.
And then you've got your other rotational guys, your Adam Gotsis's and those
6'4", types of dudes. 6'4", 317, Jordan Jefferson.
Okay, so...
Decent size.
Yeah, so that's not necessarily like a nose tackle run massive, stuffing guy, right. But it's big. He's not small. He's going to be undersized, but I don't know. That pick, I would have liked to see them go elsewhere with it. Like I said, when you look at Twitter, going through tweets makes you think that you have to think everything is awful or amazing. And it wasn't either. It wasn't, this draft wasn't a disaster. It wasn't horrendous, but it wasn't a slam dunk. It was like C plus B minus, I think.
I mean, I looked at it as they got their needs and they took some guys that are, they took a risk on that they... It's hard for us to say because we're not sitting here, we're not watching the film, we're not talking to coaches, and we're not talking to their teammates, and we don't know who these guys really, really are. But it wasn't like last year where you had a lot of head scratchers where it was like you accumulated all these picks, and then we come to find out that they don't contribute at all. At least this year was like, okay, here are our needs. They got the needs, at least.
I can see these guys, besides Jordan Jefferson, I can see most of the guys they picked. I see where they're going to get on the field. So that I like. Last year, like, Ventrell Miller, man. Like, what? Where did, even if he had stayed healthy, where did we see him getting on the field, bro? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah,
Foye Luikin, Devin Lloyd, Chad Muma. Where was Ventrell going to play? If Ventrell had been healthy, this is what bothered me about the offseason. This was some of the negatives of the offseason. I know for a fact Doug did. I think Balky did at some point mention like how Ventrell was really coming on strong and playing well before he got hurt. Dude, if Ventrell Miller had been completely healthy all season,
he wouldn't have played.
What percentage of the defensive snaps would he
less
have
than 10%.
Correct. So what are we doing? Like, stop. Like, don't give me that BS, man. Like, I don't care. It's not to say that he couldn't have been a contributor or whatever, and I'm sure he would have played some special teams and all that, and yada, yada, yada. That's fine. But you drafted him to play linebacker, and he was not going to play linebacker, man.
And he's undersized. So.
So I will say, like, Jerrion Jones, or is it Jerrion or Jarrion Jones from FSU?
I think it's Jerrion.
In my opinion, based on everything I've read and seen and what I've watched and... He's going to be their starting nickel day one, I would imagine. Apparently, he's like lock up nickel, like this dude's like that. So, I don't really think he's much of an outside guy. That tells me also that they believe in Ronald Darby being your outside corner. Don't know how I feel about that necessarily, but at least with that pick, though, I see the vision. Like, I see where he's going to play on Sundays. Last year, there were a lot of guys that didn't see that. But I know we've talked about this before that, you know, first round's great. First round's flashy. What really makes up a team is those other rounds, the meteor rounds, the 2 through 5-ish. And then occasionally you get a diamond in the rough, 6th, 7th, or an undrafted guy. But what gets GMs fired is their first round pick being a bust, right? Last year, I do not like a lot of how their draft went, but Anton panned out, so like...
You get a pass.
You live with it. This year, I think is the same thing. Like, these other guys, we don't know. Hopefully they pan out, but even if these other guys really don't do much, if Brian Thomas is an alpha wide receiver one, like keeping defensive coordinators up at night, the draft's a win.
And it's a win, according to Graham. I think it's okay as we get out of here before we...
So what would you grade it?
I know you said I give it a B. Okay. I give the draft a B.
So a little bit
higher
than me.
You got your needs and a bunch of guys that are unproven that are boomer bust.
So you're a little bit higher than me, but you don't think that I'm being like harsh?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to be one of those people that's going to look at camp and you know, say great things about practice. I'm going to give you an opinion based on September, October, November. So that's where we'll go. I'm Dylan Denmark. That's Graham Marsh. This is the Mark and Marsh podcast on the 1010XL podcast platform. Ever get your podcast needs. And so then we'll see y'all.